This is the second side of broadcast number 579, January the 10th, 1983, side two. One more comment on that CIA report that was given to the Congressional Joint Committee. The report also said, according to the San Francisco Examiner, this was another segment, January the 9th, in the paper this week, the Soviet Union, despite weaknesses in its economy, is highly self-sufficient and perhaps the world's most self-reliant industrialized nation. Now, this is a CIA report studying the Soviet Union from 1930 up to 1980. They said, in fact, we do not consider it an economic collapse or a sudden and sustained decline in the gross national product. Analysts in the West typically have focused on Soviet economic problems. One of the worst things we can do is to underestimate the economic strength of our principal adversary, Senator Proxmire said. The import that we threaten the Soviet Union to cut off imports, they said the imports help ease critical shortages and spur technological progress and generally improve Soviet economic performance. But a cutoff of imports would threaten the Soviet economy less than it would any other industrialized nation in the world. They have 270 million people, a labor force of 147 million. By world standards, they are well-trained. They are all well-trained. They are all well-educated. The Soviet Union has a tremendous accumulation of capital assets. Much of it is worn out and technologically obsolete. But despite the large-scale expansion in some of their agricultural imports, they're basically self-sufficient with respect to food. And this article says that the idea of a sudden decline in their gross national product isn't even a remote possibility. Now, this is out by the Central Intelligence Agency, violently anti-Soviet for years, simultaneous with reports of the entire bankruptcy of the industrial world, the industrialized nations. And if you're going to compete with a social system, if it's capitalism, competing against communism, you have to offer at least what they have or better. When you swing to fascism, eventually with the mass education, television, tape cassettes, the workers are not anxious to support fascism any longer, and there is a large movement of awareness. This is why our Western allies turned against the President of the United States and decided to trade and deal with the Soviet Union with the gas pipeline. Now, last week at the press conference, Ronald Reagan was asked about the economy, the debt of foreign nations, and one question alone, they said, there's a $300 billion in Latin America alone that is owed to us. What steps will the administration take with such a problem? And our president, who isn't the world's best economist, if you haven't figured it out yet, said, well, of course there's a risk. I think it's a touchy financial situation. The recession is worldwide. And he said the Latin American countries are engaging in austerity programs. They've been starved for years. And also, we are loaning out more than we have in our banks. He said if the debts aren't paid, there's a very severe financial problem, and there's no indication they can pay the debts. So what the president is saying is that there's a severe financial problem at the time when the intelligence community is telling him that our adversary, the Soviet Union, is really fully employed with no debts. Do you think the Soviet Union loans out that kind of money to Brazil and Argentina and loans out more money than they have in their banks? Do you really believe that the Soviet Union is doing such a thing? At the same press conference, Ronald Reagan mistook a military budget of $21 billion. He got caught giving the wrong statement on the weapon systems and was off only $21 billion. Incidentally, the almanac for this year, January the 7th, a long time ago in 1931, President Hoover had an emergency committee and unemployment relief. There was 4 to 5 million Americans were out of work, and just this January the 7th, 1983, 1982 unemployment. Of course, there's more people now than there were, but the unemployment rate hits, you know, is 10.8%. But construction workers, it's 22%. Teenagers, it's 24.5%. Blacks, 20%. Hispanics 15%, blue-collar workers 16%, the unemployment. So we are trying to, through propaganda, to build up our system while not building up the system and going into debt with the weapons. And even as of this morning, the president is asking more money for weapons. It is total insanity. Now, without any interruption on other diversionary subjects, no matter what happens in the news for the next few weeks, I'm going into a tangled area very slowly because it is a it reaches to the fragments of our society that I've been discussing 12 years. I'm going into the Vatican, the assassination attempt on the Pope that I analyzed in May of 1981, compare it with the evidence coming out now. So again, you have a view here of what we discuss on these programs, and I'm going into the John Lehman family, Secretary of the Navy. We had amazing secretaries of the Navy, from James Forrestal, who was also in the Defense Department, with his work with Admiral Byrd, and then Forrestal is killed at Bethesda Hospital as one of the first experimentations on ways to die. John Conley from Texas, with his links to Michael Sindona and the Vatican and the Vatican scandals and the John Kennedy assassination he covered. There was Fred Korth, Secretary of the Navy, tied into General Dynamics and TFX. Mr. Korth was the attorney for Mr. Ekdahl, Marguerite Oswald's husband. The stepfather of Lee Harvey Oswald, the Secretary of the Navy, was the attorney for him. I'm going into John Warner, Secretary of the Navy, and the Lehman family, because they are caught. John Lehman, as a Secretary of the Navy, is caught in the news with that Abington Corporation. He represents Boeing and Northrop, where they get a $40 billion contract for airplanes that are defective. It's a parallel to the 1962 contracts that were given to Fred Korth, Secretary of the Navy, and the General Dynamics Corporation down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, as against Boeing. We're giving contracts to defective equipment, price overrun, overcost, political appointments, things that we don't need. Well, the Social Security and the other problems in our country are mounting, and the economic collapse is on the brink. 40 million alone contracts to Northrop and Boeing by the John Lehman, whose family, one brother works, Lehman worked with Henry Kissinger, one works for Senator John Warner, next door neighbor to Edwin Wilson, and that whole Secretary of the Navy combine. Another one works as a propagandist for the Vatican, trying to put down the Catholic bishops at this time, and the Soviet Union has accused them of using this assassination attempt to hide the real role of the CIA in the assassination attempt of the Pope. The John Lehman family is propagandists, with John Warner, Henry Kissinger, the Navy Department, with Northrop and Boeing and the Vatican, and he's the first cousin of Princess Grace of Monaco, the Philadelphia Samuel Cummings, Senator John Tower ball of wax. I'm going to go into the what is happening in the Vatican, specifically the assassination attempt on the Pope, the charges that are going back and forth, and I'm going to put them in, not going fast, in the most simple form this week and next week so that you have a background for all time, because what is happening here is, again, a parallel. We have two parallels going on simultaneously, one with the contracts of the John Lehman organization and his wife, which is a CIA dummy front of, the Vatican Opus Dei connections, giving contracts with our tax dollars for products that are not even workable. We have the parallel of the General Dynamics and the Fort Worth Dallas exposés of that during the Vietnam War and how the plane really functioned. Then we have a parallel between the murder of John Kennedy and the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul II. Lee Harvey Oswald worked with Navy intelligence, and we'll go into these people with the same Nugenhan, Mr. Pipes, and Richard Pipes, and with Mr. Paisley, and the Task Force 157. Oswald worked in the Soviet Union in Navy intelligence, but before he came home, before the decision to murder John Kennedy was made in 1960, before the decision was made on how to murder him simultaneously, they were working the cover. So after he's through with all of his assignments in the Pacific, in radio work, electronics work, the U-2 bases, in the Philippines and in Japan, He is sent home with a Russian wife that everyone assumes, if you're Russian, you're communist, just like if you assume you're a Bulgarian, you're KGB. Marina was a white Russian, Tsarist family from Minsk, associated with the Reinhard Gehlen operation, the Ottoman Bolshevik Nazis, came to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, they gave Oswald an assignment. Go to New Orleans and hand out handbills in front of the Trademark Freight Cuba Committee. Then they sent him to Mexico, and it wasn't even him at all, but he did take a trip to Mexico. It wasn't him at the Mexican embassy, the Cuban embassy in Mexico City. They gave him a pro-Castro cover in New Orleans and in Mexico, even though everyone Oswald worked with in Dallas, first Fort Worth, then Dallas, and then New Orleans, and in Southeast in Asia when he was in the Marines. But when he came home, it was right-wing military intelligence, NASA, people employed by NASA. Oswald was a CIA man with paths to anti-Castro Cubans. He had a double, somebody that emulated him and went around using the Castro, pro-Castro cover, so that it would look like Castro wanted to kill John Kennedy. And when the House Select Committee opened up again their research, 1976-77, on who killed John Kennedy, and they had only a few million dollars to do the work. One-third of it was spent on did Fidel Castro do it. So we will see budgets and money and propaganda on the Bulgarian KGB Andropov attempt to shoot the Pope. So if you separate the real Oswald from who he saw, who got him his job, his security clearances, his passports, his training, from the propaganda of Castro tried to do it, and you separate the Bulgarian story of the KGB wanting to shoot the Pope, the great Antichrist because of the labor unions in Poland. When you separate that, you have the massive propaganda going on at this time on the Bulgarian connections, and I mean massive, and then you, as we did with the John Kennedy, with the Castro connection. So that's why it's important to do an overlay now analytically on these stories. Now, one item that I do want to mention, and then we'll swing right to the Vatican. In July of 1981, that was a year and a half ago, broadcast number 500, I was talking about treason and terror for the purpose of total fascism. And I had a list of names on in that broadcast that's on the printed sheet if you don't have that broadcast. It is very up to date now, as are most of these programs. I hope they always will be. But I said, what do these names have in common with Alexander Haig's terrorist mentality? Because he was Secretary of State, and of course, he still is very important in this echelon of corporations and influencing space stations, United Technology, and the future space operations, and his contacts with Hollywood now, and interlocking boards that he and Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger are on. And I listed names like Theodore Shackley, Edwin Wilson, Frank Nugan, Michael Hand, Frank Turple, Kevin McCullough, Richard Helms, the Bay of Pigs, George Corkula, George Bush, Vernon Walters, William Casey, William Colby, Alexander Haig, John Connolly, Michael Sindona, John Hinckley Jr., Muhammad Ali Ajah, Mark David Chapman, who shot John Lennon, the Wells Fargo Bank in California, the Green Berets, and Vernon Walters. Now, those names are very significant because they interweave into these stories today. Vernon Walters was a gentleman in October that went to see the Pope, who tried to stop the priests from the anti-nuclear movement. And the Soviet Union is charging the CIA right now, for the reason of blaming the Bulgarian story, is because the priests in the fall of this year brought in the anti-nuclear movement and the wish for peace in the world. And they're accusing Vernon Walters of his trip there, and also the John Lehman family, the Secretary of Navy, coming down on the priests. Now, will it work? No, it's not going to work. But these names, the Green Berets, have been hired for the security of the Olympic Games in Los Angeles, and I gave you the background a few weeks ago of how it was formed by Hitler's chief of intelligence and the top Nazi killers that set out in Germany and then moved to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Now, those names are important and I can pull them into almost every story I do and current articles today. But this was in 1981 in July, a year and a half ago, that I was telling you about these names, because they will, I'll use them in current stories, but I want you to try and remember them, and I'll put them again on a printed sheet that accompanies the tapes to this broadcast. Now, one major story to get right into along these lines: the Pope named 18 cardinals this last week. I'm sure most of you read that. And, of course, the front page story of the New York Times: an American is passed over. Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, the American whose elevation seemed probable last year, was not named. Paul Marcinkus, from Cicero, Illinois, right out of the old Al Capone neighborhood, in charge of the Bank of the Vatican. He still can't leave the Vatican. The Pope must get awfully bored with him. I wonder if they eat dinner together, if they even talk to each other. Marcinkus would be arrested if he set foot outside the Vatican, so he's sort of locked in his prison. And maybe it's like Sartre's No Exit. They have to live together until the end. Maybe Marcinkus will die of an apparent heart attack or one of the poisons they fed Pope Paul I. I don't know what they're going to do with Marcinkus. Now, the Pope did elevate Hermann Abst in charge of the Vatican Bank. Many of you might have read this last week, the confrontation of the Holocaust Center down in Los Angeles, charging the Vatican with using Hitler's head of the Reich Bank to be in the Vatican financial circles. Again, he's 82 years old. Charles Higham, who wrote Trading with the Enemy, was up here in Carmel. In November, I discussed his new book. I also mentioned Hermann Abst as being part of the Reich Bank and being appointed by the Vatican. And Charles Higham had tapes of these broadcasts of that particular subject. He's out touring the country with his new book right now. He had those tapes, and he went immediately to the Holocaust Center and had press conferences and was mentioned in the Washington Post as instigating an investigation into why the Vatican is using Hitler's financier to handle their finances, that full cycle which we analyzed on these programs, how the Polish Pope worked at Auschwitz, worked for I.G. Farben. Mr. Hermann Abst was on the board of I.G. Farben, making the chemicals to exterminate over 6 million. Well, there were more than 6 million Jews alone, but more than 6 million died as a result of the I.G. Farben chemicals and extermination program. When Charles Higham called me about it, he said, "Did you hear about the press conference? Did you hear about it?" That was material that I called attention to news media people, from the minute I saw it in the Washington Post, New York Times. Hermann Abst's appointment was on the cover of the New York Times, as a matter of fact. And then Higham went down to the Holocaust. He was living in L.A. He still does, but he's traveling. Went to the Holocaust Center with the information. I said, "Why don't you simultaneously tell them that what I've been trying to say to Rabbi Weir down there for 2 years about the I.G. Farben Pope from Auschwitz? Why hasn't that story broken yet? Someday it will, but the minute the Pope, what became the Pope, and the other one was poisoned, I began the investigation of this Pope, his background, and who he worked for. But at least it's coming out." Now, Abst was promoted, getting back to that. But Marcinkus, if the Pope had made him a cardinal at this time, it would have said, "I don't give a damn about anyone in the world. I don't care about you. The hell with it. This is what I'm going to do," and make Marcinkus elevated to a cardinal. But he didn't. And I hope the pressure is on that he never did. He made cardinals behind the Iron Curtain. That is true. But then he made another step, and this is a step forward in terms of these forces of evil confronting persons, facing them eyeball to eyeball, and backing down. The Pope backed down for making Marcinkus a cardinal. That is a very important step. The next thing he did was he made Joseph Burdendine a cardinal. Now, that is another step to anger Ronald Reagan and Vernon Walters and the Pentagon, Mr. Pipes, and those people I've been talking about. There are articles in the newspaper that the Soviet Union had said instigated this confrontation of trying to blame the Soviet Union for the shooting attempt on the Pope. I can't share all of those with you, but there are many articles, even in the Washington Times, which is run by Reverend Moon, an article, "Divesting the Peace Bishops of Their Moral Luxury." And this article is about the Catholic bishops on a cloud called pacifism, and they're saying below, we're just opposed to mushroom-shaped clouds, and they're trying to force these people to change their tune about the anti-nuclear, that they have to give up the luxury of the nuclear deterrence. The world has had 37 years of nuclear peace, and they're worried about a whole nuclear holocaust where almost all the people on the planet Earth will be killed by nuclear bombs. And the Pope has elevated Mr. Bernardine, who is behind the nuclear opposition right now. Another story from the Washington Times. I love reading the Reverend Moon newspaper back there. The bishops get a letter saying they're making a mistake. This is a half-page story by Lieutenant General Daniel Graham, proponent of the high frontier defense concept, and he's answering the Catholic bishops for the nuclear freeze. You're making a terrible mistake. Well, Mr. Graham was in the Defense Department at the time of the COINTELPRO program that wanted to unite the CIA, the FBI, and Defense Department into all one Gestapo instead of several agencies, and he's telling them a whole page that you bishops are working hard on something you can't do. And also the Washington Times saying they have to divest themselves of the moral luxury of wanting a world without nuclear arms. Now, the Wall Street Journal had a story. I'm just citing a few of these in November. Now, in November 1982, Catholic bishops will redraft their statement on the morality of nuclear arms strategy. The Roman Catholic bishops are getting a scolding from Rome, you know, and this is at the time in October when Vernon Walters, who was a representative of the Vatican, the Sovereign Military Order, Malta, the Opus Dei, ran to the Pope, what are we going to do with these bishops? And when the Secretary of the Navy's brother was going around the country as a propagandist to put down the bishops. You remember the story I wrote for the National Examiner about Grace being in the Vatican. Here's her first cousin as a propagandist pressuring the Pope. And another story, Time Magazine, November 29th, The Bishops and the Bomb. A theology of peace challenges the nuclear strategy. And there's a photograph of Bernardine, and he is saying the issue is not simply political. The church must be a participant in protecting the world and its people from the specter of nuclear destruction. Now, Mr. Bernardine was elevated to cardinal, and that is a very important step of the Pope this last week, passing up Paul Marcinkus and elevate Mr. Bernardine. There aren't that many good things that happen in the world. You have to go at length to explain them and understand them because there's so many pessimists that think we never can have change. Everything is going from bad to worse. An interesting thing is that something bad has to happen to make a change for the better. It is never made voluntarily. We attended a conference here at Asilomar about 22 years ago on existentialism and Zen, and Rollo May, the well-known psychiatrist, was here. And he was explaining that there's only two ways to change your life, really, or to change any major, it has to do with countries or people. One is to have 40 years of analysis, which countries never do, even though the CIA has done 30 years analysis of the Soviet Union and realized that they're not bankrupt. So I take that back. There are ways to analyze the situation, or one shock. And when Roberta Calvi, the banker for Banco Ambrosiano and for the Vatican money, was hung in London, it forced a whole lot of major changes and investigations. And out of that came a response and awareness of people in Europe when their money was tied up. They had to have new alternate ways of behaving. And even the Vatican was brought into the scandal, into the debts that Calvi had. He was murdered because of the debts, because of the Opus Dei. Then the Pope has to reevaluate. And all of a sudden, the Pope is sitting with Marcinkus, who can't leave the Vatican. And even he has to evaluate. I've got crook Marcinkus. I've had him on my lap. I've been Pope for X amount of years now. And before him, you know, Pope Paul VI had him. And these various scandals and books coming out, these exposés, the book on the Vatican Connection, the movie on the Vatican, it's all the Monsignor, it's all coming around him, and he's getting sunk in the quagmire, not only his past at Auschwitz, but his current corruption and the money corruption. So even he has to reevaluate who's running the world and who's crazy, and even the Pope has to say, Marcinkus, I can't push you up to one higher place. I guess the good Lord will have to give him a slide scale on down to you know where when it's all over. But Bernardine is promoted, and Bernardine is the man speaking against the weapons. And also, that is an insult to the United States, to the CIA, to Mr. Pipes and Rostow and Mr. John Layman, and to the powers that be that are pushing the nuclear weapons. It is a slap in their face to elevate a man who doesn't go with their weapons. And when they began to listen to Mr. Bernardine and the bishops began talking about the weapons, there was a long story in the Los Angeles Times that I saved. It's titled, Washington Remains Diplomatically Aloof from the Vatican. We were so cozy, remember, during the solidarity years, during the pushing of the labor unions. But when the money dried up, when the Vatican money went to Lech Walesa, when the Western banks, the Chase Manhattan, the Citicorp, the Morgan, and the large banks began to pile these huge debts that can't be paid back, the connections of us with our allies began to sever. So as of October, U.S. Vatican ties cordial, but that's all. This article in Los Angeles Times by Don Schank, S-C-H-A-N-C-H-E. Washington remains diplomatically aloof. It says, today, America's diplomatic relations with the Vatican are no longer so close. In fact, the United States stays as far away from the Vatican as it can. The story says relationships are friendly, as witnessed by President and Mrs. Reagan's Vatican visit in June. That's when Ronald Reagan fell asleep while the Pope was talking in that room. The main point that I do want to bring up is that when the Vatican begins to talk about anti-nuclear weapons and gets a political idea of their own, the bishops and so forth, and meddles in the affairs of other countries that is opposed to what the United States wants, then we have stories that we are diplomatically aloof and apart from them. There was another interesting story this last September from the Vatican. The Vatican compares the U.S. sperm banks to Nazis. The California genius-level sperm bank that hopes to create a race of superhuman men has been the target of an attack by the official Vatican newspaper. The paper says that those sperm banks that attempt to breed geniuses by artificial insemination are openly racist and reminiscent of the Nazi experiment to create supermen and superwomen. Infanticide, eugenic abortions, the practice of alchemists, magicians, charlatans, the Nazi experiments are historic and cultural precedents, said L'Osservatore Romano, the newspaper from the Vatican. The Vatican opposes this, and they mentioned the American millionaire complex, the apparent reference to the California bank established by Robert K. Graham, to collect the sperm of Nobel Prize winners and super bright scientists. So in last September, September the 30th in the fall, they were opposing the policies that we're doing here in California. Well, the time moved so quickly that I thought I would have time on this program to get into the Village Voice article, but I will begin next week and go right into that. In essence, what I might say as we finish off this broadcast in time, that when I published that article in the National Examiner that Princess Grace could have been murdered because of her trips to the Vatican this summer at a time when primary people in the Vatican were being killed and the National Examiner didn't print them, Alexander Cockburn, C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N, I always call him Cockburn, but it's really Cockburn, he had an article in the Village Voice making fun of the stories about Grace Kelly, November 30th, 1982. Why Grace had to die, and he made fun of the National Enquirer, the National Globe, the Star, and the fight that the Kelly family had with the Prince of Monaco, that they thought Grace was murdered, and there was enough evidence of a cover-up and a scandalous story. Then he says, on November the 2nd, the Grace saga reached a peak of inventiveness with the National Examiner headline, Why Grace Was Murdered. The thrilling narrative by Cliff Leindecker told how Grace, in the course of a visit to the Vatican, stumbled upon details, perhaps a spy had sought them out, of the Vatican international banking scandal. She had paid the price for her inquisitiveness. There was a wealth of interesting circumstantial detail, but at that point I noticed that the Examiner's story was based on theories of our old friend and assassination buff, Mae Brussel. I was pleased to see that Grace had fallen in the clutches of this grand mistress of conspiracy theory, but I felt no need to read further. And then he says, now the story is dying, and they've gone on to Liberace. The Princess Grace story isn't dying, and Alexander Cockburn does not call Mae Brussels and say, hey, this sounds interesting. Why do you make the allegations? He has made a habit of putting me down, and I can explain why I don't have time on this tape. Next week, we will continue right on with this subject, the role of propaganda in the United States, where it's coming from, how it's trying to push that World War III, the opposing forces that are surfacing, the role of the Vatican, and finally, men like Alexander Cockburn coming out with a story that is magnificent, with information that is of value to everybody. It should be in every paper in the United States. Maybe we can make copies and send them to editors around the country. If you want a copy, send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll get it to you. In the meanwhile, we'll have to leave off at this point. I hate to do it, but the hour is up. This is Mae Brussels in Pacific Grove, California, and I'll be back with you next week.